stay fly.
We thought, okay, it's gonna work in United States. We're gonna say sell a couple of thousand copies, you know, maybe 30,000, 40,000. Someone said 75,000, and then we sold a 500,000 copies only here, you know. And then the book became a bestseller in Australia, a bestseller in Canada, in Sweden, in Colombia, in Germany.
Stay fly. The views expressed by the guests are only the views of the guests, unless we say we agree, unless explicitly stated. We're going to have a great time. So, hey, Code Keepers, we have with us today Armando, and he has a great new book, In Search of Emma. And you're saying to yourself, Seiko, what's this have to do with empowerment? Stay tuned. Seiko, what's happening with Black empowerment? We'll see. Stay tuned. All right, Code Keepers, hey, learn the code, live the code, teach the code, be the code. Today with us, today we have Armando Lucas Correa. In Search of Emma is the name of his book, and I'm so happy to have him on the show. Armando, this show is about empowerment. And one of the things that I've found when you look at the holy books, and you can start with the Abrahamic holy books, the Bible, the Torah, and you know, the Quran, all of them and other books as well that are holy books, they all talk about a struggle for resources, a struggle for land, a struggle for liberty, and a struggle for children. And so I find that when we talk about empowerment, focusing on children is such an important part of empowerment. And you went on a search, as you described it, a search. You went on a big process to become a father. Tell us about that process, and what is this In Search of Emma?
Yeah, I'm so happy to present my book here today with you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yes, you know, life is a struggle, and having my child, that it was a dream, and it took me over 6 years, because I started the process in 1999 and Emma was born in 2005. It was with a lot of accidents. But I have my daughter, and believe me, you know, the biggest accomplishment, more than anything I have ever done in my work life, people in Espanol, including my writing and publishing my book, is having my children. And if you read my book, you are gonna know that all the struggle that I have to have, and all the accident that I have during the process, and all the money that I have to spend, the money that I didn't have at that moment, it was enormous. But you know, I have my child, and that's the end of the struggle. And then maybe you're gonna have another struggle soon, because that's part of the life. But in my personal life, you know, always, I think you can get depressed, you can have to fight for your right, you have to defend yourself. But I know that if I feel bad, I never go and take a pill for this, because you know, pills, they're gonna find a solution for a second. And you have to do the right thing by yourself. I think so.
Beautiful. Well, in the background, we have the beautiful island of Cuba. So how did growing up in Cuba shape your views on family and liberty?
Yeah.
You know, Cuba's been in a really strong fight for liberty all my life. So,
you know, Cuba is a very complicated thing for Cubans. You know, I was born after the revolution, and for me, it was the only thing that exists, only one party, always one kind of mentality. And for example, my family, they are Catholic, but religious, it was a problem. At the same time, when I was a teenager, during the late 70s, I knew that I was gay. And at the same time in Cuba, there were concentration camps for gays and the religious people. And it's a little claustrophobic living in an island with only one government, only one party. And for me, I know that my life is gonna be outside the island all the time, you know. And I left the country in 1991, I studied in Cuba. I went to college in Cuba. I have a great family support in Cuba. And I was invited because I studied journalism. I became a theater dance critic for a theater magazine in Havana. And so I got an invitation for Pratt Institute in New York. And then with my partner, and we have been together for 30 years, and I got an offer to work for the Miami Herald, the Spanish edition, the Nuevo Herald in Miami. And I became a reporter. And then I started my new life. You know, it's hard when you start like as a refugee, you know, coming to this country, starting from zero, and make a living. And in my case, I remember at the beginning, it was hard. And at the beginning, it was writing obituaries, you know, the obit, and doing all the clerical stuff. But in 6 months, I became a reporter for the newspaper, writing for the front page. And 2 years later, I was buying my first house. And when I saw the backyard, you know, it was a small house in close to the newspaper, very diverse. I love the diversity, living in diversity for me, it was important. And I said to my partner, I think we are ready to have a child. I said, you are crazy. We're never gonna be able to adopt a child in Florida. Because only gay couples during those years can't adopt a child by the law. It was a law written in 1977. But you know, I am very persistent. I always trying to fight all the struggle and all the obstacle that I have. And then in 1997, I got an offer to work in a new magazine called People en Español, you know, the Spanish version of People magazine. I become a senior writer, and I read an article before going to print about a gay man who became a father via surrogacy with an egg donor, and he paid around $80,000, something like that. And you know, in our business, we don't make a lot of money. You know, journalists, we don't make a lot of money. But I just sold my house in Miami. I bought an apartment, small apartment in Manhattan. And I said to my partner, okay, I think this is the way to go. We don't have the money, but if we need money, we can sell the apartment. And you know, here we are with our children.
All right, so what advice do you have for those looking to start a family, particularly those in your community who traditionally didn't do adoption?
Yeah, I am I am a huge promoter of adoption. And right now, same-sex couples can now adopt children in all 50 states. And some states still have restriction on fostering children, but it's easier now. My advice is always like, if you want to be a father or a mother or a parent in general, never give up. There are multiple options. You can adopt. You can go through surrogacy. You can adopt an embryo. You know, right now, and do it. You know, follow your dream. And never stop. There are gonna be tons of obstacles, tons. But if you want to be a parent and you really want it, you're gonna get it. Just dream it.
All right, well, since Emma, your beautiful Emma, you've had two other children. What has fatherhood taught you?
Yeah, you know, when Emma was 2 years old, she said, I want to have a brother. I said, oh my God, I'm not ready to go back to all this timer. But we have embryos frozen. We pay for my storage in the clinic. And I said, Gonzalo, if the surrogate mother is ready to work with us again, let's do it. If not, forget about it. And then we called Mary, and she's a great woman. And I remember when we chose her, because it's hard for a gay couple to find surrogate mother who wants to work with us. It's really hard. And then I remember she wrote a letter to me before the meeting in San Diego. And she said that she's a white woman married to a black a guy, and they have a biracial daughter. And she doesn't want that her daughter be rejected because she's biracial. And then she said, I am never going to reject someone like you, a gay couple who want to have a child. And then, you know, she won our heart immediately. And then I called her when Emma was 2 years old and said, oh, God, Armando, whatever you ask me, if you want to have another, let's do it. And at that moment, she had 3 kids already, and by herself, not hers. And then we started the process. We did a transfer, and we were lucky. With the first transfer, we got our kids. And then for me, if I learned something about all this process, about fatherhood, is to be patient. Nothing happened the next day. When you are young, you know, tomorrow is a long, long way. No, everything you want is now. During the fatherhood, my all this year trying to have Emma, writing a book, that it takes months, years of dedication and hard work, is be patient. And if you want it, you're gonna have it, you know.
All right, so your first novel, The German Girl, is a international bestseller. How did that change your life?
A lot, and I always say that The German Girl exists thanks to Emma. It was Johanna Castillo, my first editor and my literary agent now, who read Emma in Spanish and told me I should write a novel. And I told her every writer or those who want to be writer have a novel already written. And I didn't speak to her about that novel I had, but of a few chapters I have written about the St. Louis. A few days later, I was signing a contract with Simon & Schuster to publish a novel I had yet to write. And I love my job here as an editor-in-chief of People in Español. I have a great team. They were the number one Hispanic magazine in the US. But writing is my passion, and since I was a child. And then I have this book that we thought, okay, it's gonna work in United States. We're gonna sell a couple of 1,000 copies, you know, maybe 30,000, 40,000. Someone said 75,000. And then we sold 500,000 copies only here, you know. And then the book became a bestseller in Australia, a bestseller in Canada, in Sweden, in Colombia, in Germany. And you know, Sico, I think my books, and you know, doing the promotion of In Search of Emma and comparing with the Daughter's Tale that is about the Holocaust, I think all my books is about the fear that we have for the other one. You know, we are always afraid of people with a different skin color, who believe in a different God, who has a different sexual orientation, who have an accent. We are always afraid of the other one. And believe me, we are all human beings, but at the same time, we are different, and we have to respect the differences between us.
Beautiful. One thing I like about your magazine, you know, the magazine that you, that I guess you're the editor.
This is the new cover. This is, he's a famous actor in our community, Roberto Manrique. And he came out with a boyfriend. This is a new digital cover that we have today. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. And one of the things that I liked when I went on the People in Espanol site, I found my people, mi gente, you know, I found stories about the Afro-Latinos that I didn't see. And I'm not saying I'm Afro-Latino, but I've always been around Cubans and Dominicans and Peruvians and Panamanians growing up. So I kind of had a bicultural experience, and I didn't see them in magazines. I definitely didn't see them in People magazine when I was growing up. Didn't see many Latinos in general in People magazine. So I just want to salute what your magazine is doing now. But what has or should, you know, your magazine done to improve the experience of Afro-Latinos and the LGBTQIA community?
Of course. And, you know, when I decided to write my books, you know, In Search of Emma, that I said yes to the editor, I was worried because, you know, my magazine, we have 7 million readers. I don't know, 68%, maybe 70%, they're Mexican, they're very conservative, they're Catholic. And I didn't want to annoy them, you know. I am the face of the magazine. I'm talking about that I am gay, I'm having a child. And when I talked to my mentor, and she's a smart woman, Martha Nelson, said to me, yes, you have to do it because, you know, it's not only about education, it's showing that you are a non-traditional family, but at the same time, you are a family like all the other families, you know, you want the best for your child. And then I learned that that was important for the brand, and I never had a rejection, nobody canceled the subscription because, you know, I wrote the book. And every time that I can, and we don't have enough yet, that we have people like the actor coming out, it's going to be in the cover of the digital cover. We're going to cover it. We're going to, you know, you see the cover, they said he is presenting his family. You know, we're trying to do it with respect, and the people has to understand that his boyfriend is his family, not only his boyfriend. And the other thing is, we are Hispanic, we're Latinos, but if you see television, you see Univision or Telemundo, you're never gonna see all the colors in our community. And I hate that, you know. And for me, if you see, we have Afro-Latinidad, we always trying to promote our big, big community with all the differences that we have. Because we speak Spanish, but at the same time, we have Black, Asian, biracial, white. We have, you know, our community, it's hard for me to find talent because if you see Univision, all of them, they are blonde and blue eyes. You know, if you go to the telenovelas in Mexico, it's who is these people? You know, this is not the reality. So every time that we have something different with like an actress, like is a Mexican nominated to an Oscar, and he looks different, he looks like a real Mexican, you know, we trying to promote it and we put it on the cover. And right now, we have an Afro-Latina having a baby, even she's on an A-list, you're gonna have it in the cover because they need exposure, and I want them to understand. And because the whole community appreciate that we're showing the whole spectrum of the community, because watch the soap opera from Mexico, is that like they are filming in Europe or, you know, in Denmark? They don't look like, where is the Latinos there? No. I am not talking about, you know, I know we have people from different color and background. I am not saying, but we are not the only. Well, now everybody in our community, they are blonde, blue eyes, and that kind of physique, you know. Maybe I'm crazy, second, yeah.
I think we're all crazy because I think we all see the colorism. And, you know, the colorism impacts, you know, melanated people, people of color throughout the world. And you're right. Interestingly enough, if you look at some of the early Ebony and Jet magazines, a lot of the models were Asian. Because they were scared to have the, you know, the darker skin toned, blacks in these black books because they was afraid they wouldn't even sell. So, you know, colorism is something we still are dealing with, but I'm glad to see when I went to, you know, people in Espanol, I was able to see a reflection of the total diaspora, you know, and the total differences that occur in the Hispanic or Latino or Latinx or whatever term you want to use community, you know. So that was great. I want to end because I know I had you for a very short period of time and I don't want to go over. I want to end with just a little more about your book. You know, for those who are, you know, looking and they're saying, okay, he has a book, In Search of Emma, How We Created Our Family. How has this book empowered you?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I wrote the book, I think, you know, it served me as an emotional outlet for me, you know, because at the beginning I said, okay, I didn't want the book to be like a manual to have a child, okay, this is not the idea. And And of course, you're going to find all the clinic and the process, and you can follow my steps. But I wanted to write a book like it's going to be a long letter to my daughter, you know. And at the beginning, it's going to be like a dialogue. And I decide that I want to write this long letter that, you know, my children are bilingual, but she reads better in English. And we were waiting for her the book. Right now, I have the book this week, and she's going to read it this weekend. And for me, this is very emotional. But this is a long letter to my daughter. And at the same time, I want to show that maybe we're not a traditional family like everybody expects, with a mother and a father in the family, but we are a family like yours, you know. We are the same. And maybe you're going to see two dads, and you have to respect that, you know. And if you see my children, they're like your children, you know. And we're trying to do our best.
Well, we've been spending time with Armando. Armando, I really appreciate everything that you're doing. The book is fire. So if you're looking for a new book to read, In Search of Emma, How We Created Our Family. I know that the LGBTQIA community is probably celebrating this, and they should. This interview happened during Hispanic Heritage Month, so celebrate that as well. We're going to celebrate family, and thank you for your time, man. So
thank
for
you.
The Code Keepers,
yeah.
I hope you saw the message of empowerment, yeah, in what Armando has done.
I really enjoyed this interview. Believe me, I think this is the last one, and it's my favorite one.
Salute that. So, hey, live the code, be the code, teach the code, keep the code. Have a great night. Peace.
Thank you. Good night.
Stay floss, 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 stay floss.
The views expressed by the guests are only the views of the guests, unless we say we agree, unless explicitly stated.
Stay floss, stay floss, stay floss, stay floss, stay floss.
Stay conscious. Stay fly.